for those of us who have lived in Jacksonville for a while, and as Kathy and I are going on our 30th year, the Jaguars have not played in a playoff game, as you know, since 1999. So let's think about which things did not exist in 1999. Can you think of things that did not exist in 1999? This building did not exist in 1999. This land existed in 1999, but the Lakeshore Church did not own it. We bought the land actually in 2000. Actually, Everbank Field did not exist in 1999 because Everbank, the company whose name is now on the stadium, did not exist in 1999, to give you a sense of how long it's been. The pool, which is currently in the stadium, that is on every shot that you see when the Jaguars play on TV, did not exist in 1999. So it's been a while since they've been there. So Gary, now thank you again for totally distracting us and for me for bringing that to everyone's attention. If you're visiting with us today, we are glad to have you with us. And you're probably wondering, why isn't Jimmy talking to us today? We typically, at the first Sunday of every year, on behalf of the elders, speak to the congregation about kind of the theme and the work that we anticipate bringing forward in the new year. Mark's already mentioned in his prayer that this is the first Sunday of the new year. And I don't know, it's January 7th, and I know that's only 7 days into the year, and we've got 358 more days to go. It seems like we've actually been around for 2018 for a while, but this is the first Sunday of the new year, and we are glad that everyone's chosen to spend Sunday, and hopefully this will be the first of 52 Sundays that you are with us, or at least worshiping with other saints wherever you might be. Jimmy has mentioned that our theme this year is Faith at Home. And we pick a theme every year not to make it the sole point of our discussion throughout the year, but as a way to constantly remind us about the importance of this topic each time that we come together. And you'll notice that when you come into the service, there'll be a banner which reminds you of that. And I think it's fair to say that all of us know the importance of faith at home, but sometimes one of the reasons you choose the theme is just to reinforce what you already know. So we're going to start 2018 with a poll question for all of you. How many of you have somewhere in your home either a stitching or a photo or a print of a Bible verse? Anywhere in your home. Okay? All right? It looks like most everybody has one somewhere. And some of you are going, "Best, I better go get one if I don't have one so I can raise my hand next week." All right. So let's hear some of the verses that you have. Somebody who raised their hand. Okay, very good one. Others? Okay. Others? All right. And I'm suspect if we continue to go around, there would be lots of these that we would choose. And you might choose them for very personal reasons. For the longest time, I had on, right above the mirror, the verse that talks about the qualification of elders, to remind me of who I'm supposed to be and what I'm supposed to be in fulfilling the responsibilities as roles of one of your elders. Lacey, I think it was you that mentioned you had the verse about, "But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." That comes from Joshua 24:15, and Lacey has anticipated the verse that I thought that I want to use this morning, that I thought many of us would have. That is one of the more popular verses that you see if you go into someone's home. And not only that, it is a verse that really, I think, drives home the centrality of faith that Joshua was trying to teach his people at that time. Now, we don't have any record in the Old Testament of Joshua having that in his goat tent, I guess, or wherever Joshua lived. But it's interesting to me how Joshua gave that verse. It comes towards the very end of the book of Joshua, and Joshua is near the end of his life. And the period of the people at that time were really, almost for the first time, in a period of relative peace. Things were good for them at that time. The Lord had brought them through many, many battles. The Lord had brought them through very trying times. And Joshua uses, beginning even back in chapter 23, when he talks about faithfully serving God in verse 10, but really throughout chapter 24, he's recounting to them the history that they had gone through. And he felt it important to remind them of the necessity of always remembering to serve God. You would almost think that it was that verse is something that's really needed at a very trying time, that when he was challenging them, like, you know, you have the right, you have the opportunity to choose this way versus that way, and we want to make sure that you choose to serve the Lord. But in this period of relative peace, he gives them this very famous verse. And let me go back and read verse 14 leading up to verse 15. He says, "Now therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in faithfulness. Put away the gods that your father served beyond the river and in Egypt and serve the Lord. And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your father served in the region beyond the river or the gods of the Amorite in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And that was a challenge that Joshua was giving not only personally, but to the nation of Israel at that time. And Lacey, you and Trey have chosen well to have that verse in your home. And the other verses that are chosen are all done for the purpose of reminding us of the importance of faith at home. Now, the faith at home that we're talking about today really isn't the faith in your home. That's the faith that you individually and as your family need to think about ways that you're going to be constantly reinforcing the importance of faith and remembering faith. And I suspect all of you have different ways and traditions of doing that. I can remember growing up that we had, before breakfast every morning, some reading of a verse or some devotional or something that would remind you and get the day started, somehow related to something to remind us of the importance of faith. And maybe you have that tradition in your families. Maybe it's offering a prayer before a meal. Maybe it's as you're tucking your children into night, you listen to their childish bedtime prayers and the wisdom that comes from those, whatever it might be. But there's another family that I want to talk to us about as we're thinking about faith at home, and it's the family that is here today. It is this family. It is this congregational family that we happen to call the Lakeshore Church of Christ, but it really is the family of Christians everywhere, but in this case, the family that just happens to meet here. Jimmy has mentioned a number of times the funeral service that we had for Blanche yesterday, and certainly it was sad for the family, I'm sure, Susan and Megan, but certainly affirming for the rest of us, because really there's nothing more special than looking back on a life well lived. And Jimmy made the point yesterday that if anybody was going to get into heaven on the basis of works, it would be Blanche. And I absolutely believe that to be true. I suspect all of us have been to funerals when you listen to what was said going, yeah, right. This is not one when someone had to be eulogized into heaven. This is one where everything that could be said was only the lesser of what was really done. But Richard Brand, who was leading the singing, said something that just struck me when he got up here to lead singing. He said, "Blanche was a mother to many of us." And I looked around that audience and people that I knew that was the case. Mike Lyons was here, and Steve McCain was here, and others were here. And in reality, she was not a mother to them. I mean, even though they told us of the genealogy, which now reaches, 6,300 people, they weren't in that line, Richard and Steve and Mike. But in the greater respects, she was a mother to all of them because she was a member of their church family and they of hers. And that's the family that I want us to think about today. And when we think about faith at home this year, we're really talking about two different aspects of faith at home. Faith in the physical home and in your physical family, and faith in the congregational family as we all try to help each other get to heaven. So I want to put up a verse here, and Riley's already read it for us, that in many respects can sometimes seem a little harsh. And people, I suspect, at that time when Jesus gave them this verse in Matthew chapter 12, might have been struck about, what's he talking about? That seems really harsh. Matthew chapter 12 comes at a period of time where at the beginning of the chapter, Jesus had been criticized by the Sadducees and the Pharisees for actually going out and picking grain in the field. And they're saying, you're working on the Sabbath. And they were trying to find a way to just trap him into the works that he was doing at that time. So what did Jesus do? He withdrew himself from the people that he had been speaking to. Just immediately before chapter 12, he had been speaking in the synagogue. He withdraws himself, but so many people there had seen the good works that he was doing. And it talks about how those who needed to be healed, who wanted to be healed, then began to follow Jesus. And throughout chapter 12, you see the numerous people that he heals. And the various times that he's almost kind of having to withdraw himself and more people come upon him, he frankly just couldn't get away from everyone. And then we get to the very end of the chapter here in Matthew chapter 12, and it strikes me the contrast we're going to have here between Jesus' interaction with his physical family and the family that Jesus was in fact establishing at that time. So let's read Matthew chapter 26 and verse 46 through 50, these few verses. While he was still talking to the multitudes, behold, his mother and brothers stood outside, seeking to speak with him. Then one said to him, "Look, your mother and brothers are standing outside, seeking to speak with you." But he answered and said to the one who told him, "Who is my mother and who is my brothers?" And he stretched out his hand toward his disciples and said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother." Now that, just think about, had you been there during that actual event that Matthew records for us, and here's Jesus teaching to all of these multitudes and talking to all of these people, and someone, use it figuratively, comes and knocks on the door and says, "You know, Jesus, your mother and brothers are right outside." Now, I think the natural reaction for most of us be, whatever it is we were doing, we would stop, go out and get them and tell them to come in or talk to them or find out what it is that they wanted at that time. We know what they were trying to do. It says in verse 47, they were just seeking merely to speak with Jesus. And you go, well, you know, that seems a little odd, because why couldn't they just go up and talk to Jesus? Well, remember, the whole of chapter 12 is he's healing people. Look at verse 46. He says, while he was still talking to the multitudes, it was almost as if the mother and brother had to get an appointment to talk to their own son and brother. And you would think Jesus would stop everything he's doing at that time to sit and talk to his brother and his mother. Now, I don't think he was being rude to them. I don't think he was being dismissive of them. Jesus was trying to here make a larger point that there is a family that is even more important than our physical family, and it's the spiritual family. And that's what I think he's trying to say here. He answered and told them and said to the one who told him, "Who is my brother and who are my brothers?" And he stretched out his hand toward his disciples, his fellow faithful people, the people who had the belief in him, the people who, to put it in our context, share the same common beliefs in Jesus. And he said, "Here are my brothers, here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother." We don't do it as much anymore as it used to be done, but I can recall growing up in the church that there was brother so-and-so and there was sister so-and-so. It was almost like a title that you wore. And the moment you became a member of the church, you were suddenly Brother Joe, or you were Sister Susan or Megan. And I mean, some congregations still do that, but it's not as common of way as thinking. The idea of it, though, is directly emanating from what Jesus said here. And sometimes I think that by the fact that of us not using those titles and terms, and I'm not suggesting we necessarily have to, but when they were constantly being used, it reminded you of the closeness and the kinship that was meant to exist, as opposed to, well, it's just someone else that I worship with, or someone I expect to see on Sunday or Wednesday whenever the church meets. You see the concept of family. Even those families that don't get along real well are still family. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, some of the things that we see in 1 Corinthians, because there is embedded in that relationship a distinction that doesn't exist in other relationships. There are, for instance, people I am sure that you know who you would consider to be friends, but who are not Christians. Do you have the same relationship with that person that you do with someone, for instance, who is a Christian, and particularly someone here who is a Christian with whom you regularly congregate? And I would suggest it's probably not. Now, that's not to say you can't be friends with people who aren't Christians. What I'm saying is, there is unique in this relationship of people who are Christians something that exists and we think to exist well beyond even this life. And I think that's what Jesus is talking about. So when we talk about faith at home as the theme, What we're really talking about is how we are all going to ensure that we can be the most faithful people we can possibly be in our home, and in this case, the home being the congregation. Everybody see what we're trying to talk about and argue here? The thing is, as Jesus identifies in this passage, is one of, if not the closest relationship that we ought to have. If nothing else, we should think about, just as Richard said yesterday, our fellow brethren, whether male or female, as our mother, as our father, as our brother, as our sister, and more importantly, the responsibilities that we all have toward one another, just as we would think about our responsibility to our parents, our children, our physical parents and children. You see the importance of that relationship that he talks about? Now, we know in the New Testament, the idea of family is often used in conjunction with the church. For instance, in Ephesians chapter 5, when Jesus is talking about the marriage relationship, or he uses the idea of the marriage relationship to talk about the importance in the relationship that he has with the church. In Galatians, Paul talks about, or he uses the phrase in chapter 4 in verse 19, of my little children, and even goes so far to talk about the relationship of Christian as one being born of childbirth. And the idea here is, using the most close association that you have on earth, that of physical family, to equate to the relationship that we are to have with one another in the church. Now, we know that we are all, as members of families, we have responsibilities one to another. You know, your responsibility is to care for your child. Legally, ethically, morally, whatever term you want to put onto it, that is your responsibility. As the roles change, it is the responsibility of children to care for their parents. That's the ideas that we see embedded in the Bible. The same thing relates to our spiritual opportunities and spiritual obligations. We've talked a lot about here, and if you listen to the news at all, there is a drop, a decrease in the number of what are called millennials, people of that age group, who have any religious affiliation or religious service whatsoever. So there's been lots of studies about that, why that percentage, and it's not just in millennials, but certainly that's the group that is being studied the most. Why is it that so fewer are not participating in religious services or having a religious identification? And there's lots of reasons being given to that. On the flip side, however, is looking for things that are done that cause people of that group, millennials, people like my daughter's age, what ties them back to religious thought and religious service. And there's a group that has done a lot of study on this. It's a group called Barna, and they've done some of the more reputable academic studies on this. What do you think is the number one desire, according to their survey, that causes young people to want to be involved in the church? I was surprised by this. Anybody have an idea? What? Examples. They use the term here, intergenerational relationships, which is a fancy way of saying a young person wants to have a relationship with an older person in the church to be an example to them. And on that basis, they've determined is the most effective way to encourage young people to be involved in a church and to keep young people involved in a church. Now, I don't know why I was surprised by that. I shouldn't have been. But it is both academically, according to this study, the thing that binds people to the church, but it is also bred well back into the teachings that we have in the Bible. If you have your Bibles, turn over to the book of Titus. And here Paul speaking to the young man Timothy through and giving instruction to Titus talks about the responsibility that we as older people have towards teaching the younger people. And if that study is to be believed, it is this message of giving example that is going to be the most important thing and responsibility that we have in keeping younger people in church. Titus chapter 2, Paul says here, but as for you, teach what accords sound doctrine. Older men are to be sober-minded, dignified, self-controlled, sound in faith, in love, and in steadfastness. Older women likewise are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers or slaves to much wine. They are to teach what is good. And so train the young women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind and submissive to their own husbands, that the word of God might not be revealed, or may not be revealed. Likewise, urge the younger men to be self-controlled. Show yourself in all respects to be a model of good works, and in your teaching show integrity and dignity, and sound speech that cannot be condemned, so that an opponent may be put to shame, having nothing evil to say against us. If you talk to almost anybody, son or daughter, they're going to tell you that the person they probably learn the most from is their parent, their son or their father. Sons are going to model the behavior of their father, and daughters are going to model the behavior of their mother. That's because that's the example they've seen. What Paul is telling us here in the book of Titus, that we who are older have that same responsibility within the church. Just as that example exists between mother and father in the family, the physical family, it exists in the church as well. And I want us to all think this year, and you can decide whether you fit in the category of older man or older woman, whatever. Are we fulfilling our responsibility to do that in the church? Whether that be through our attendance, whether that being through our help toward others, whatever category it might be, have we and are we being the example that we should be to others in our church family? Because that's, I think, the thing that so strikes what Paul is saying to us. And if the study is to be believed, and I believe it is to be the case, that is the thing which will cause our younger people to stay in the church, that they see good examples from us. And that's a big responsibility, and that's just as much a responsibility of faith at home, home being here, as it is in your own physical families. So I want us to think about our responsibilities that we all have toward one another. And I would certainly suggest to you that as we have heard about of Blanche yesterday, but also thinking about other great examples that we always see in this congregation, that we do a good job on that, but we have to be aware of that at all times. Now, that's not to say, that we're always going to get along perfectly. And it would be naive to think that every congregation at all times is going to do well. And if you don't believe that, look back in 1 Corinthians. It amazes me the things that Paul had to address in 1 Corinthians of what the people were doing at that time. Just read throughout the book of 1 Corinthians the family relationships that were being strained. In chapter 6, Paul had to instruct them, don't take your brother to court. Don't sue your brother. I mean, frankly, can you imagine that? How would it be if I'm suing Joe for something, and we've got, Joe just shrieked, I've got this lawsuit going on with Joe, and then yet we're somehow expected to get along really well and worship God together on Sundays. It just doesn't fit. But Paul had to talk to them about that. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, the chapter that we normally talk about is one to lead into the Lord's Supper, and it's appropriate to do that. Paul says in verse 17 that he recognized there was, quote, divisions in the church, such that it is when they came together, it is not for the better, but for the worse. Paul's simply saying they had so many divisions going on, it would be better if they just never came together. They had to heal those divisions and those rifts. Now, fortunately, we don't have that situation. But we need to be aware of those little things that might fester and one day become those types of divisions. And just as Paul told the Corinthians to knock it off and to get rid of that, we need to make sure that we do the same. You know, ask yourself, if you sometimes feel a slight insult or hurt feeling, is it really worth causing division in the church? I would suggest no. And fortunately, again, we haven't had many of those situations, but if they do arise, ask yourself, is it worth causing division in the church? And if you don't think it could happen, that's the reason 1 Corinthians exist. And they didn't solve their problems immediately. Remember, Paul had to write 2 Corinthians almost in amazement that he had to come back and tell them a second time about the problems they were having in the first part, in the 1 Corinthians. But let's be careful to make sure that it doesn't exist. Faith at home can go so far as to making sure that we preserve harmony in our obligations to each other. We're running a little bit out of time, so indulge me for about 2 more minutes, and let's think about what are we supposed to do as we jointly approach problems together or issues together. It doesn't even have to be a problem. There are times that we have to think through as a congregation how we're going to approach certain issues. We could do it on the basis of our own opinion, We could do it on the basis of our own preferences, how we would prefer things to come out. In most instances, that's not going to be the way to do it. They had this type of situation in the early church, much more serious than anything that we have had to face. So what did they do? For instance, in Acts chapter 15, they had this great issue over circumcision and how they were, whether they were going to associate with people in that. So what did they do? Well, first of all the elders got together and they thought about the issue, and they actually wrote a letter to be delivered to the congregation. And what impresses me in Acts chapter 15 is that when they delivered this letter to the people, it was well received, and after being heard and received, and I'm referring primarily to verses 30 through 35, the people then came together and went on rejoicing in the Lord. What I take away from that is they approached the issue on the basis of looking at the topic, getting instruction on it, listening to the word, and then being able to go forward together. I hope that if we confront similar issues in our congregation, that we will have the same spirit at all times. Now, I'm very optimistic about our opportunities that we have here as a congregation for 2018. We will have challenges, but I think we will have more in the way of positive opportunities. And I hope as a family, we are all together on that. Let me leave you with this little thing that I happened to find when I was doing some research. There was a guy whose name has been lost to history, at least it was to mine. His name is Karl I. He is the last emperor of Austria before it became torn apart in the Ottoman Empire in the losses in World War I. But it is said that Karl I, as he was marrying Empress Zita in October 2011, right at the conclusion of their marriage service, turned to her and said, "Now we must each help each other get to heaven." That is a tangible example of faith at home. And that is an example I hope we can all have as we go forward. One way we can start the new year well, if the need is there, is to help each other respond to the gospel call. If you need to do that now, we encourage you to do so while we stand and sing.